7:52 Eastern Time, Thursday in the first round of the U.S. Open.
Fox Sports Update on the Right Choice, KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, specials on wine, and dinner specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update. Well, fertilizer prices have retreated sharply in recent weeks as concerns over prolonged supply disruptions tied to tensions in the Middle East have eased. Bloomberg says that urea prices in New Orleans fell to $453.50 per short ton last week, down 36% from mid-April and the lowest level since early February. The decline follows fears that the conflict with Iran could disrupt shipments through the Strait of Hormuz. Well, a group of 123 ag and conservation groups want staffing shortages at the USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service and Farm Service Agency to be addressed. In a letter to Senate Ag Committee, the group said reducing staff levels and office consolidations have created significant barriers for producers. They're calling for adequate funding to prevent further office closures and no relocation of employees if it leaves an office with two or fewer staff. Well, the USDA is accepting applications for its fiscal year 2027 agricultural trade promotions program, providing producers and commodity groups with opportunities to expand export markets and boost demand for U.S. products overseas. Applications for the market access program and foreign market development program will be accepted through August 14th. The programs operate as public-private partnerships that help agricultural organizations promote U.S. products internationally and address trade barriers in foreign markets.
You've probably been told that to reach a millennial farmer, you have to go digital. Facebook, Vimeo, YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, LinkedIn, an online publication, or maybe a podcast. But which one? Oh, and how receptive is this age group to your sales pitch during non-work social time? Maybe the best place to reach a farmer with a farming solution message is when they are, well, quite frankly, farming. You know, it's easy for us to find them during the day as most farmers are behind the wheel of a pickup truck or farm equipment with the radio on, listening to this station for the Ag Information Network of the West News. If you'd like to deliver information about your terrific product or service, give us a call and we'll connect you directly with our community of loyal farmer listeners. Reach real farmers right here, right now as they listen to what is important to their farm operation. They trust us, they'll trust you.
With your agribusiness update, I'm Bob Larson.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages are mixed in afternoon trading, with the Dow climbing on Iran deal optimism. The Dow has hit an all-time intraday high and surging past the 52,000 level for the first time. Oil prices continue to drop, with West Texas Intermediate crude at around $76 a barrel. The tech-heavy Nasdaq is losing steam as tech stocks falter. The Magnificent Seven big-cap tech stocks are lower, led by Tesla and Nvidia. Industrials and financials are gaining. Shares of Yum! Brands are up 2% after the fast food giant agreed to sell Pizza Hut for $2.7 billion and said it plans to use the proceeds to invest in technology and return capital to shareholders. And shares of Elon Musk's SpaceX are surging 9% and surpassing Amazon in market value, becoming the world's fifth largest company just days after hitting the public markets. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
My name is Whitney Allen, and I'm a widow. My husband Ryan died. We never thought we'd ever have to use life insurance, but the unexpected happened. With Ethos, signing up was fast and 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. No medical exams, and you can get up to $3 million worth of coverage. I'm grateful we were prepared.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/term. That's ethos.com/term. Paid spokesperson. Time spent on application may vary. Online health questions required.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
American Legends, next on KPRL. Brought to you by Davis Body Shop.
Letters to the editor don't get picked up by the newswires. Maybe sometimes they should. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by K-Brush Concrete, serving the entire Central Coast for more than a decade. Call Kevin at K-Brush Concrete, 423-4033.
In these times when so many of us have a tendency to lose faith in ourselves, it's good now and then to be reminded of the good-natured, generous spirit that's been an American characteristic for as long as there's been an America. Not too long ago, such a reminder came in the form of a letter to the editor, and I thought you might like to hear about it. The writer was a refugee from South Vietnam, but he was American, not Vietnamese, a clergyman. I suppose a missionary, although I can't vouch for that. The Reverend described a 20-foot craft adrift in the Gulf of Thailand with no fuel, no food, no water, barely afloat and sinking with its cargo of 82 refugees. Towering over it was the aircraft carrier, the USS Midway. The Reverend described the Midway as tired. It had already deposited some 2,000 refugees on other ships, refugees who had arrived in more than 500 flights. One flight was a light observation plane not designed for carrier landings. The Midway had to move up to top speed to enable the pilot to land with an entire family jammed inside the tiny fuselage. There were 40 choppers on the deck, brand new F-5E fighters and A-37s that had carried people who preferred not to be liberated by the communists. The Midway also carried a sign the crew had made that read, "Welcome Refugees." So they picked up the 82 who were begging to be taken aboard. Once on board, they had one question. Would they be handed over to an unfriendly government, perhaps to be eventually murdered? The executive officer of the ship told them this would not happen. He said, "Our job is to make you as comfortable as possible, heal the sick, and feed you to your heart's content." That was the official policy of our nation, and therefore of the Midway. How was it carried out? Well, according to the Reverend, the sick were cared for. A tiny baby with double pneumonia was cured. People without clothes were given American clothing. Sailors took the old clothing and washed them for their guests. Pretty soon, homeless children were being given piggyback rides on the shoulders of American seamen. And Navy T-shirts bearing the Midway decal began appearing in the little ones. The tragedy they'd been through hung heavily on the adults, of course. So the sailors planned entertainment for them. But let the Reverend tell it. Quote, "Different Navy groups collected money. Ads went into the ship's paper asking for toys. Charity begot more charity. There is a motto on the Midway. The Midway puts it together. For the grateful refugees, that's the understatement of the year." Unquote. In the dark days right after World War II, when our industrial power and military might were all that stood between a war-ravaged world and a return to the Dark Ages, Pope Pius XII said, "America has a genius for great and unselfish deeds. Into the hands of America, God has placed the destiny of an afflicted mankind." I think those young men in the Midway have reassured God that he hasn't given us more of an assignment than we can handle. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan, in his own voice, brought to you by K-Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
Protecting what matters on the right choice, AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday. It's 12:30. The bear is in the building. It's time for Protecting What Matters. PWM is a broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Our first guest today is El Chango, Eric Olson, owner of the Central Coast Distillery, and really the godfather of all distilling in the Central Coast. And we're going to be talking about the rise of craft spirits in the United States and the Central Coast, the path to becoming a craft distiller, and creating new spirits that appeal to various different generations. Eric, welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Thank you, Barry.
It's great having you here. And then at 1 o'clock, we have two, I won't say old friends, but people who are on the show on a regular basis, and we love having them, Jenny Grininger and Rebecca Kosnick. They are the trustees of the Templeton and Atascadero School Districts. We're going to be talking about Moms for Liberty versus the Southern Poverty Law Center. How the heck did the Moms for Liberty get on a hate map? And we're going to do a follow-up on the Supreme Court ruling Mahmoud versus Taylor, which deals with parental opt-out for kids on LGBTQ education. And then we're going to start with math and reading proficiency, social emotional learning, cell phones, and AI policy. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So Eric, it's great having you here. And let's start with you. Okay, I mean, you've got a really interesting background. We were talking before we went live here. You grew up in the Palo Alto area, and you ended up going into the Army. And how come?
Well, I wanted to have some money for education, so that was what really drew me to it.
Yeah. So what kind of stuff did you do in the Army?
A little bit of jumping out of helicopters, shooting machine guns, and painting my face and running through the jungle.
Wow. How did that change your life?
I think the discipline changed my life a lot.
Yeah. And then as a result of the Army, you ended up getting into the hospitality business. Tell us a little bit about how that all happened.
Went from a green outfit to a white outfit. French chefs yelling at me instead of drill sergeants.
What was your first job?
First job was La Tostana in Napa, Italian restaurant.
And then where did you go? Was that here in California?
Yeah, definitely.
Whereabouts?
Up north, northern California, and Velvet Turtle they had back then.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to chef school in Sausalito, chef school in San Francisco, Culinary Academy. Cordon Rouge.
I think I told you I worked my way through my freshman year as a banquet waiter. Did you have to wait tables and do all that too?
Yeah, I waited tables, bartended. Chef school, they want you to try it all.
So you learned the business from the ground up.
Exactly.
And then from there, you kind of moved on to some really I'm sure other restaurants, but tell us a little bit about it. I was interested to know that you've been the head chef at a number of the big resorts in California.
Yes, I have. I've been executive chef of Ojai Valley Inn and Spa, executive chef of North Ranch Country Club, and I work for Pebble Beach for the U.S. Opens and the ATM Pro-Ams.
Wow. So you really got it all, huh?
Well, I try to donate some of that time to other things like boys and girls clubs and orphanages in Mexico, Tijuana, and some church events and things like that. So I try to donate some of my time.
Well, that's great. So the one thing I was very interested in when you were at the North Ranch Country Club, there were a lot of celebrities that went there and played golf there and were members. And you and some of the guys instituted, as they were getting older, they were passing away, the last dinner for them. Tell us a little bit. I thought that was really interesting. You know, I actually had a death doula on the show a couple of years ago talking about what they do to help people pass on to the other side, as it were. And this is kind of part of that whole process. Who came up with that idea and how did it work?
Well, I kind of fell into it. Every day you'd see the same members. You got to know them, got to know their families. Pretty intimate. You know, year after year, these people would come back every night and dine. And after a while, some of them would actually get cancer or some kind of terminal disease. And they'd come to me and say, I want you to cook my last meal, or I want you to do my wake, or I want, you know, they'd want me to do something for them. And I soon realized that that last meal was something they wanted to remember, some kind of memory of their mom cooking in a kitchen or their grandmother or something. So I'd have to ask them, what kind of plate was that on? How did it look? How was it cooked? So I was trying to bring back that memory to them before they passed.
Are you able to share any of the folks you did this for?
I probably shouldn't, but okay. it became a little dark at a certain point.
It did it.
Yeah, because you felt like, hey, this is your last shot at something to really give this person joy.
Wow. Well, it's a really great story. So after you're still in the hospitality business, but let's talk about your background and Anna's role, your wife Anna's role, and you've been up here for almost 10 years, basically imagining and building out the distillery business up here in the North County, for sure, in the Central Coast. Tell us how that all came to you.
Well, I built a distillery, and I found that there wasn't a lot of help out there to get that license going and learn how to run the still. So I went to schools all over the United States and threw myself into the ABC laws, and eventually people were coming to me for help opening their distillery. So I had a consulting business, and our team would go in and set up different distilling operations and get them through the licensing. So yeah, we had a big hand in a lot of them. Cass Winery's coming online soon. I'm real excited about that one.
That's very cool. So let me ask you some, you know, one of the things that I picked up was that your name brand is Old Forager.
Right.
Tell us about, is that like your that's your signature whiskey that you distill?
Exactly. Forager came from a family way back, great-great uncles. They used to forage for medicinal properties and put it in alcohol, and then they dispense it in their pharmacy in Eureka. It was the Fitzells, and you can look on the internet, Fitzell Pharmacy, and it tells a little bit about that whole family. And that's kind of where I came from, and I used to go up to that ranch and see some of that.
Yeah. So tell me the secret. And when you make a craft whiskey or agave or whatever it is, there's a certain batch limit that it makes it a craft,
Yes.
Spirit. Well, tell us a little bit about how that works.
It's under 200,000 gallons, which is quite a bit. So we don't have any problems keeping underneath that.
So 200,000 gallons, that's a lot of whiskey.
That's a lot of whiskey to produce.
Okay, but obviously that's done in multiple batches, really, correct?
Absolutely,
yeah. Yeah, you don't have a still that makes that much.
No, not yet.
Okay, well, there's something to look forward to. Well, again, as we were talking before the show, and I always like to stump my guests a little bit, you know, I did a little research on the nexus between the drug making industry and the distilling industry in the United States, and it really does go back to the 19th century, where drug companies and distilling companies were basically one and the same,
right?
And the alcohol was probably just the delivery system for the whatever herb or root that they were grinding up to put in it.
Exactly.
And then ultimately, it was probably the alcohol that made them feel better, right?
I think a little bit of that, too.
Okay. So I was very interested in learning that there are actually distillery schools in the United States. And, you know, tell us a little bit about that journey, because I think you mentioned to me that you've been to just about every distillery school in the U.S. So Moonshine University is a big one and all that. But tell us a little bit about how that process went for you and how you learned your craft, really.
Well, I did the same thing basically with chef schools when I was chefing. So I went to all the schools available. So I did the same thing with distilling. So I went up to Seattle, Washington, and there's Heritage Distilling, and they have some of the best ranking medals for a small craft distillery. I went to Utah and studied under a gin expert, went to Texas and studied the Texas-style whiskeys. Spent a lot of time going back and forth to Kentucky, the Moonshine University, Kentucky University, with the Jim Beam Institute. There's some labs in Kentucky that I went in and worked with some of them. There's never enough time in the day for me to learn. And I'll hop on a plane and I'll fly off to someplace and really get into it for a week.
Really? That sounds really terrific. So again, tell me a little bit about the process what they teach you in these schools. I mean, is it just like the actual distilling process, or is it the flavor process? I mean, what goes into this whole thing?
That's a very good question. So I feel like in Kentucky, there's families that control the barrel industry, or families that control the corn, or families that control the whiskey industry. And each one of those families has a segment or a lab that has a full family that works behind it. So you go to each one of those disciplines and you study barrels from that family, and they take you to the barrel producers and the rack rooms and how the barrels operate and all the different toasts and the cooperages that make them. Or you study the gin and all the different botanicals with the gin. Or you go to the whiskey guy, and the top whiskey guy tells you all of his failures, and he eats Fritos and he's all tattooed up in cowboy boots, but he's got a master's degree. So it's really a complex but a really casual environment. They bring in food. You think you're going to eat barbecue, but you're eating Cuban food. really a neat place. It's got that Southern hospitality to it. There is quite a bit of drinking, so they have a shuttle from the school to the hotel that you're staying in. So they have a good control.
and so there are different types of stills, right?
Exactly.
So what are the two? I think there's basically two primary types, but I'm sure there's variations on the themes. Do you have just one still or two stills? How many different types of stills do you have at the Central Coast Distillery?
I have three stills.
Oh, really?
One of them's a modular, so we can tear off the column still and put a pot still in it. So we can run it and really clean up the alcohol, or we can put a pot on it and really get heavy flavors. So it's all modular. You can take it apart, put different pieces on there. So we have all the apparatuses we need. We can add a gin basket. But we like the column still. That's the most advanced. And they have a still now that's called a three-chamber still in Denver, Colorado. And that's something that they pulled out back in the day, like the 1900s, and they're just starting to develop it again and understand how this thing works. So that's the most advanced one right now, I think, is the three-chamber. It all started with the coffer still, which is like a continuous still where it pumps in a warm mash and runs it through the still, and then you get the spirit out of it. So there's quite a few stills, and depending on how much money you want to make, far as profit, or you want to make quality, or, you know, those things all come into play.
So if we were to stop the Central Coast Distillery, would we find you back, you know, there with an old hound dog, you know, and in overalls and that kind of thing, or is your process a little more hygienic than that?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more hygienic. I hope it is. You might find me on a cowboy hat on
with
Friday
a shotgun.
Night.
You got a shotgun back there? No, you don't need a shotgun anymore. Okay.
No, we have plenty of law enforcement that come in and you know, have our drinks. So I feel really safe there. We also have a martial art group, Krav Maga, that comes in. So we feel more than safe there.
So that, it's interesting because when I was doing my research, it seems that the state of California is actually pretty friendly to encouraging the distilling business in the state. Is that what you found?
I find the state's pretty encouraging about us paying our taxes.
Yeah. Well, they like paying taxes. Yeah. They like that. At some level, I mean, they encourage the marijuana business, but it seems like the distilling business is doing a little better than marijuana these days.
Yeah, I think it does bring in a tourism business. Mm-hmm. I think if it's done correctly, it really does something for the community. It brings the tourism. It brings the community together. They have their own local bar. They, you know, can see each other. Everybody knows everybody by name.
Yeah.
It's a good environment.
Yeah, it's a great environment. I love your place, as the audience can probably tell. So so it's interesting because here we are in the middle of a big wine appellation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we hear a lot about, you know, the decline in wine sales. Mm-hmm. And we also hear about the generational shifts in tastes for whether it's wine, beer, or distillation or whatever it is. I mean, what do you make of this? I mean, when you first started opening, you know, doing distilling here, did the wine industry kind of look down at you?
Well, I think, you know, if you rewind the tape when I was chefing, it was all about the wine when I was chefing. I had to know about Lafite Rothschild, and I had to know about, you know, Montrachet and all the good wineries. So then I noticed that craft beer started to take over, and we actually had, you know, reserve craft beers downstairs, and people were buying craft beers, and we had to have, you know, 30 lines of craft beers going on. And then the distilling started popping, and now we're into that. So I do think there's an oversaturation of the wine industry, because I do think we're all hung over from COVID. It was just so much drinking during COVID, and now the numbers aren't showing it, you know, because everybody says we got to go back to work and pay off some of these bills.
Well, and it's interesting. I think most people don't realize, because I did some of this a little bit as an amateur. I think I told you, you know, basically whiskey starts off as a wort,
right?
Which, so basically it's beer, and you, and then you, what I get beer. What's the distillation process for? And that's not a distillation process, but there's a fermentation process,
right?
And then from that, you can either make it beer, or you can start distilling it and distill it down into whiskey, or right? Is that
exactly
right?
You make a wine wort or some kind of fermentation that you're going to distill later.
Yeah,
depending on what sugar or starch you're going to use.
Yeah, you could even take like the lees from a grape barrel and distill that stuff down too, can't you?
Absolutely.
And anything you can distill.
Day old donuts.
And since I'm a Scotch drinker, what makes Scotch Scotch?
Well, it's made in Scotland and it's done with barley, and it usually it goes into a bourbon barrel. So there's those key things, and then they have the different areas that, you know, controls all those scotches.
And then there's the peating process for some of them. Some are peated, some aren't peated, and all that.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting for us, because we have the mezcal, which is a smoked agave. And we've started to mix some of those scotches with some of that mezcal and make drinks out of that.
All right. Well, you just anticipated my next question. So tell us a little bit about how many whiskeys are you making, and then what are the other things that you're creating?
So we make two different whiskeys, and then we make three different agaves, and we have a line of liqueurs for different restaurants, and then we have a vodka, a gin, and a rum.
What are the two whiskeys?
It's almost like
it's Old Forager is one of them, right?
Yeah, it's a bourbon whiskey, real corn forward, real sweet, mild, real approachable, real soft. And then the other one's kind of the evil twin. It's 111 proof, and it has more rye in it, more congeners, and it's a little deeper and darker.
See, I like the rye because because I don't like, for me, I guess because I'm a Scotch drinker, I don't like the sweetness of bourbon. It's just too sweet for me. And I've tried so many times, because everybody around here loves, makes bourbon and loves it and all that kind of thing. But it's like, ooh, I just can't do it. But I can if it's not, you know, too sweet, but still. But, and I was amazed. Tell me a little bit about, you know, the agave that you were made or have made, because you had me taste some about a month when I first met you. And I mean, I don't like tequila at all. So when you first said, I got some agave I want you to taste, I kind of like turned up my nose and you made me taste it. Tell us about that and how that's different. And I mean, that was really unbelievably good.
Well, I think, you know, originally we used to punish our cooks by making them drink mezcal because it was so bad years ago. But over years, you know, the Mexicans have gotten really good at some of their tequilas and their mezcals. They've really sharpened it up, and they've hired some really talented people, and they brought some barrels in. So with that said, I figured my wife, Anna, being Mexican, I better get on the game and do something in California.
What a caring husband.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think there's a little heritage thing there. But yeah, so we did a lot with the agaves. We've done some studies with different agaves, different yeast strains, different cooking methods. We were going to move forward with one launch pretty soon, which will be a spicy agave. Have a little bit of heat in it.
And one of the things that's really special about your agave is the bottles. You have some really, well, hold that, because I hear the music coming up. We want to talk about those special bottles, which are just absolute works of art. All right, folks, we'll be back in about 2 minutes, and we'll wrap up this first half hour with Eric Olson of the Central Coast Distillery. So stand by.
usually a reviewer, but I had an amazing experience at Davis Body Shop. From start to finish, the experience was ideal. Everyone was friendly, helpful, and professional. They kept me updated, did quality work, and had me in and out. No hassles, and returned my vehicle to me in perfect condition.
If you ever have an accident and need to repair your car, you could do what Ann did from Paso Robles. She took her car to Davis Body Shop. And Peggy from Atascadero said,
our family needed repairs to one of our cars, and friends had recommended Davis Body Shop. We were very pleased with their helpfulness, their attention to detail that was provided to us. They explained the process and kept us updated as repairs were made. They also assisted us in securing a rental car. I would definitely recommend them to anyone who needs repairs to a car.
Davis Body Shop is the area's largest auto body collision specialist on El Camino Real at Atascadero and on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet.
The Red Scooter Deli with two locations, downtown and on 6th Street in Paso Robles. The downtown location on Pine Street is open 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursdays now for concerts in the park. Plan your musical enjoyment with a to-go dinner from the downtown Red Scooter Deli. Great deli fresh food delivered throughout Paso Robles, Templeton, the airport area, and wineries. Go to redscooterdeli.com. Don't forget to order your party platters for graduation or Father's Day from the Red Scooter Deli.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Eric Olson, owner, along with his wife Anna, of the Central Coast Distillery, which is in the Valley Fresh Shopping Center, correct?
That's correct.
That's on off of Del Rio and the 101, correct?
That's right, Barry.
All right. I've been there a few times. I remember now. Folks, you can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775-238-KPRL. Tell us about the special bottles that you're putting the agave in, because that's a whole story in and of itself.
Well, I get a kick out of it because I'll see reels of bottling lines and thousands of bottles going through this bottling line, and then we do a reel, and it's just a local artist hand-doing a bottle on a wheel out of clay.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a while to get all the clays to actually hold together, and then the right size bottle, the amount that it holds, then the top where the cork would go in and seal, and then the bottom where it wouldn't leak. And this whole thing is an art piece because you have a shot glass that goes on top and then it sits on a tray and it has little tiny serving trays for limes or salt or things like that.
So I take it these are like, they're pottery of some sort,
they
right?
They are.
And it must be, what are they? They're fired.
Definitely fired.
So and glazed and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so,
food glaze.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So there's a special glaze for that too. Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's a big deal. When people see it, they go, wow. And I always tease people when they bring their bottle back. I say, I'll give you $50 for that bottle.
They just want you to fill it up is what they want you to do. Do you do that or are you not allowed to do that?
We do it. We sanitize the bottle and we have a ceremony kind of thing. My wife takes care of it, makes sure it's sealed up, right? And it still doesn't leak and puts all the, you know, regulation tags on it and everything. And then we call the person that comes back.
And will you find, do people find the worm at the bottom of the bottle when they're done?
I hope not. I hope those days are over.
That's pretty funny. Okay. I want you to talk a little bit about your place, the Central Coast Distillery, and I want you to start with your nickname, El Chongo, because you have special wallpaper in parts of the store or the restaurant with what's an El Chongo.
El Chongo is me, and I got that name at Ojai Valley Inn because as a chef, I think people are intimidated just to come in the kitchen and talk. So I would have kind of monkey around a little bit and make them feel more comfortable. So that's where I got the name El Chongo. And then our wallpapers inside of our bathrooms, we have three bathrooms, and they're wallpapers of monkeys that are smoking cigars and drinking martinis and throwing bras in the air. And people get a kick out of that and they put it on Instagram.
You're such a sexist.
We have
it's
both.
Just to say it's okay. Yeah, it's fine. Well, if it's approved by Anna, it's probably okay, right?
Yeah, it's got her stamp on it, I guarantee it.
And before I forget, Anna didn't want to come on air today, but she has a big background in hospitality as well, right?
Absolutely. She was the GM at the Allegretto, and she was GM in Morro Bay, and GM at Ojai Valley Inn, so she's got quite a bit of experience.
All right. And yeah, I mean, I have to say, I went in, we did the scotch tasting about a few weeks ago at your place.
Right.
And then stayed for some food afterwards. And I'm really, you know, again, having been in the hospitality business myself and being a banquet waiter, you got a top-notch staff.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, I went to another place the other night, which I won't mention the name locally, and I'll never go back because it's just what it wasn't up to what they were charging.
Oh, wow.
For their food and booze, you know. So anyway, tell us a little bit. Okay, so you've got coming up here, we have a few more minutes. Are there, tell us about the concept of the Central Coast Distillery, because you're doing different things, and we're going to talk about special events here, but you also have a cigar smoking area, right?
Absolutely. We did some cigars last night by the fire pit outside. It was very nice. We do, on Wednesday nights, we do a $3 taco. People come in and have drinks or no drinks. And then Thursday, it's almost on the Japanese side. We do sashimi or tempura. And then Friday, we have a prime rib night that's always busy. Saturday, we do some kind of Italian side. And then Sunday, we do comfort food. Right. Where you get a price point where everybody can afford to have their family come in.
Now, is it best for people to make reservations if they want to eat?
If there's a large party, they should make reservations. Otherwise, they should just come early.
Okay. And are you open to, you know, doing bar mitzvahs and weddings and things like, I mean, I'm no, they're smaller, you know, bachelorette parties and
Absolutely.
Things like that. Because you have an upstairs, right?
We have an upstairs, but that's more employee lounge office style.
Oh, okay.
But we can hold about 140 people inside and out.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. All right.
And we're open for anything. We did a private highway patrol party recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was really fun.
Before I forget, how's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Go to our website. Or they can just come on down, 1875 El Camino, Atascadero.
Well, I showed up. What was it? I think I showed up on a Sunday with a Saturday with a buddy of mine, and the place was locked up.
Uh-huh.
And you were so kind to let us in. I mean, you know.
There's a guy right there. Let him in.
There's a pigeon.
I can feel it.
There's a pigeon. All right. You have a big grand opening event on June 27th. What are you going to be doing there?
We're going to be live music. We're going to have food. We're going to have all kinds of interesting cocktails. We're going to give tours of the distillery. We're going to sign up people for our membership. We're going to show them our humidor. It's going to be a great event.
Is there a time frame for that?
There is a time frame. We're going to start at 2:00. We're going to have some ribbon cuttings with the Chamber of Commerce of Atascadero.
All right.
Some local, you know, representatives, and then we're going to go into some live music and some fun after that.
So it's basically an all afternoon and evening event.
I think it's going to go on for a while.
You guys are going to be exhausted, I'll tell you that. All right, and again, we want to also talk about the Distillery Trail Weekend, which you're very heavily involved with, because you started most of these distilleries.
Well, I started some of them, for sure.
And so talk a little bit about that. This is August 7th. Through 9th, and how does that all work?
So you'll purchase a copper card at any of the participating distilleries, and that copper card will get you into all the other participating distilleries with all kinds of freebies and classes and discounts and tastings and just a lot of fun stuff. And there's a website you can go to, and it'll list out what each distillery is doing and what they're offering. We're going to welcome everybody with that card for 1 year, and We've honored it before, and we're really happy about doing it again this year.
So this is, and your website is Paso Robles Distillery Trail.com.
Exactly.
And that's the best way to get this, the pass, right?
Exactly. Or you can buy them at the participating distilleries.
And they're $125, right?
Yes.
All right. So, and so then what happens on the actual weekend again? So you just kind of show up at the various distilleries?
Yeah. You sign up and say, hey, I want to hit this distillery because they have this mark of spirit I'd like to try, or they're going to have this class, or they've got this kind of food, or they have live music. And then you get a map of all the other ones are in it, and then you go to so many of them, and then you start getting a nice shot glass that says Paso Robles Distilling. It's a fun event, basically.
A badge of honor that you're a lush, right? That's very good. Well, Eric, it's really been great having you here today, and we'll have you back again. And maybe we'll do a live whiskey tasting on the next one, huh? What do you think? That would be great.
That'd be fun.
All right. Thank you so much again, Eric Olson from Central Coast Distillery, which is in the Valley Fresh Shopping Center on El Camino Real and Del Rio and Atascadero. Folks, Eric, thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, I'll be back on the other side of the break with a bit more serious topic, educating our kids, with Rebecca and Jenny. So stand by.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.